Hello and welcome to the Faith and Family Matters podcast, the show where we talk about ways to build our faith and strengthen our marriages and families. I am William Hemphill, your host, and I am an ordained minister and a mental health counselor that works with strengthening marriages and families and also helping people deal with anxiety, especially as it relates to perfectionism and imposter syndrome. In today's podcast, we want to finish our series on the silent treatment by talking about ways to survive the silent treatment, ways to handle the silent treatment in a healthy way. We've talked about how the silent treatment occurs as a reaction in conflict in our marriages between our spouses. The silent treatment occurs whenever a couple gets in a conflict and one partner goes silent, or they stop speaking. The silence is a reaction to being emotionally triggered within conflict, and silence is often a part of withdrawal when a situation gets too tense. The silent party has made the decision that it would be better to keep quiet than to escalate the situation. We've also talked about how sometimes the silent partner can use their silence as a weapon or a form of punishment. Now, I'm not saying that in every case, but it does occur in some cases. And that person, when they're using silence as a weapon, they're hoping to change the behavior of their spouse by being silent. And we talk about how this silence can be unsafe because it breaks the emotional connection between two spouses. We've talked about how both the giver and the receiver of the silent treatment are both experiencing emotional unsafety and anxiety in the relationship. We've also talked about the danger of disconnect in our relationship, how this disconnect can slowly seep in and cause a number of things that can give us problems in our marriages. It leaves our marriages open to things like affairs, addictions. We also talked about how both parties can end up existing in a marriage that's totally disconnected or two people living separate lives. This might be called the roommate marriage, even if there's enough communication to have a roommate. So today I want to focus on a way that's much healthier when we deal with conflict in our relationships. And make no mistake, any two people that are in relationship for us any length of time will eventually enter into conflict, whether it's spoken or unspoken. The process that I want to talk about is called a timeout. And I want to talk about some of the things that we do during a timeout. Now, we call it a timeout because whenever we get triggered within a conflict and we start going back and forth with each other, it is incumbent upon one party, usually the party that knows that they're triggered, to ask for a break or a timeout. We call it a timeout because they use it in sports when things get a little too hectic on the basketball court, or sometimes the team is in trouble. The coach would call a timeout in order to reset the plays or reset the situation so that the team can prosper. So we can look at it as a timeout as a way to reset our marriage so that our marriage can prosper. One of the challenges of dealing with timeouts is sometimes one party will ask for a break and the other party won't give it. It's usually what we call a pursuer in the relationship. The person feels that they have to say what they have to say and feels like that person feels like we should stay in that situation no matter how intense it gets in order to resolve the problem. But we know that's not good because it's unsafe or emotionally unsafe for the marriage. Here's why the person asking for the timeout is normally asking for it. They recognize they've been triggered. They might even be what we call flooded emotionally. That means they are in such a state that they can no longer even hear what the speaker is saying. I'll ask a question, and this might be more for our wives than our husbands, because husbands tend to get flooded quicker than wives. Have you ever noticed when you were trying to talk to your husband and you saw this blank look on his face, something like this? If you see a look that's just almost like a blank expression, and maybe they tuned you out, they haven't tuned you out to be mean. They tuned you out because they can't process any more information. And so that simply means that a timeout is wanted or is needed in that particular situation. A timeout allows both parties to calm down. And we usually say at least 20 minutes for a timeout. And that's important because when we are activated, our bodies are even activated physiologically. And so the reactions that are going on physically with us, the emotions, the hormones, the adrenaline, all the things that are flowing inside of us need to go through our bodies so we can calm down. During the timeout, I think there's some things that we need to practice. And these are things that I've used in working with lots of couples, but I've also used in my own marital relationship. If I am too angry or triggered, if one party is too angered or triggered, we need to do something to calm ourselves down physiologically. Now, I've noticed this when I've gotten very amped up, not normally amped up, but very amped up, and so I'm highly triggered. I usually do one of two things. Sometimes I go to the gym and work out. That's a good way to relieve stress, but it's a good way to calm myself physically. But let's say I can't go to the gym. I often do what I call a deep breathing exercise. I call it the count of fours. And if you've ever done yoga or meditation or something like that, you understand a little bit what this deep breathing exercise is like. And so what I will do is I will inhale for a count of four. One, two, three, four. I'll hold the inhale for a count of four. One, two, three, four. I'll exhale for a count of four. One, two, three, four. And I'll hold it there for a count of four. One, two, three, four. And I'll do it again. One, two, three, four. Hold for four. One, two, three, four. Exhale for four. One, two, three, four, and hold there for four. One, two, three, four. And I will do that maybe for a cycle of four or eight or whatever it might take. Here's the amazing thing about it. When we slow down and we become aware of our breathing and we're doing things like intentionally holding our breath, intentionally releasing our breath slowly in different things, it has a way of calming our bodies down physiologically. And so I like to do that also, especially when I'm very triggered and I notice myself very amped up. And I've recommended that to my clients, especially if they're very amped up during the timeout. So here's the thing. After we've calmed ourselves down physiologically, I like to say, let's begin a process of self-reflection. And we do that by asking ourselves some questions. What was I feeling during this conflict? What was I hoping for emotionally during this conflict? An example might be I was feeling unheard and I was hoping to be understood. We ask ourselves these questions because there is meaning behind every conflict. And that meaning or value is often something that is underneath the surface. So we're not fighting about the surface level things. We're fighting behind the meanings behind the conflict. Let me give you an example. My spouse and I were in a conflict, probably one of many conflicts about parenting our children. I know many of you can understand that. We were having a conversation and my wife was insistent that certain things needed to be done and they needed to be done in a certain way in order for our child to be parented properly. And of course, I disagreed with her on her methodology. And we went back and forth and we fought. And then sooner or later, one of us just got silent. So we noticed we were triggered, we got silent. But here's what happened. We took that silence as a time to take a time out. And while we were taking the time out, we started asking questions and discerned our emotions. And in my case, I realized that I was feeling unheard and also felt not valued as a parent. And I wanted to be understood and I wanted to be heard. Now, my wife, as she discerned herself, she was fearful that our child might make a decision that would be harmful to them and that would make her feel inadequate as a parent. So behind the parental conflicts were emotions of being unheard and not valued on my side, and in my wife's side, the feeling of feeling inadequate. And behind it were also the hopes for both of us to be heard and understood and affirmed. After the timeout, when we came back, we could talk about these deeper meanings. And once we were able to talk about these deeper meanings, we could find some sort of agreement and we're able to even build a stronger connection in our relationship emotionally. However, in order to do this, we had to take a time out. We could not sit there in the conflict and keep going on and on and on and on with something that was emotionally harmful to both of us, something that was hurting both our hearts. Quick sidebar. If you need something to help you with the language of emotions, there is a tool called the Feeling Wheel or Emotional Wheel. You can look it up in Google. Many people have it. I think on Amazon you can purchase it, but you can also download copies. I use it a lot of times with my clients to help them identify emotions and to be able to express emotions to gain further understanding and relation with their spouses. Here's another question I would ask. How did I contribute to this conflict? How did I contribute to this conflict or situation that went astray? More self-reflection. Can I see my partner's point of view and value it, even if I disagree with it? Can I see my spouse's point of view and value it, even if I disagree with it? That's important. It's important for us to be able to have empathy and caring for our spouse because our spouse will see things differently than us sometimes. As one of my former pastors used to say, said, if two of you were in agreement all the time, one of you wouldn't be needed. Can I see my spouse's point of view and how they might have gotten it that way? Even if I disagree with it. Here's another question for self-reflection. Am I tired, sleepy, stressed, sick, or hungry? Am I tired, sleepy, stressed, sick, or hungry? That's important because if we have any of those things going on in our physical bodies, we will be what I like to call a little bit more sticky. And it will be a little bit easier, or maybe a lot easier, for us to get in the conflict. In my own marriage, I have saved a lot of conflict by realizing I am tired. My spouse might want to talk about something, and I say, "Dear, can we talk about this tomorrow? I hadn't gotten much sleep in the last couple nights, and I know I will not do well with this discussion." Or I've noticed we are in the midst of discussion, and I realize that I'm tired, or realize that I hadn't eaten, and say, "Hey, can we table this till after we get some lunch?" It makes us a lot better and a lot less sticky. Notice that these questions do require our own ability to self-reflect and for us to have self or personal awareness. And each spouse should be doing this during conflict. It is not incumbent on just one spouse, but on both spouses to do this self-reflection. So I will restate the questions again. What am I feeling? What am I hoping for emotionally? Am I sick, sleepy, stressed, hungry, or tired? Can I have empathy for my partner and see his or her point of view, even if or when I disagree? And here's another question for us. What would the Lord say to me about my emotions in this situation? How would the Lord speak to me about my emotions, about what I'm feeling and what I'm hoping for in this situation? Another way to look at it, what would you hope a caring parent or mentor would say to you about feeling unheard, hopeless, tired, dismissed, controlled, or whatever else may come to mind? What would you hope a caring parent or somebody would say to you about feeling hopeful, joyful, all of these different emotions we have? So, in wrapping this up, when we get triggered and we're in conflict, we step away. We do some type of physical activity to begin to regulate our emotions. And then we ask these questions as part of a self-reflective plot process to gain clarity during the timeout. And then afterward, we agree to a time to come back and talk. Notice I said we agree to a time when both parties are available, and we talk about what happened with us individually and emotionally during that time away. We talk about what we felt individually, emotionally, when we were having that discussion that led to conflict. Why is this important? I like to say this is much healthier than engaging in the silent treatment. And it will assist us in resolving conflict in our marriage and draw us closer together as husband and wife. Finally, I like to add this tip, and it's a tip I use in my marriage a lot. When we come back together, I like to pray for understanding in the situation for both of us. I like to ask the Lord to intervene. Because I believe ultimately God has a way of moving in ways that we don't always understand and can speak and bring clarity to us. I pray for understanding and agreement for both of us as the Lord directs. And in that understanding, I take the posture of openness, being willing to listen to my spouse and listen to God not just insisting on my way. I hope that this series has been helpful to you on surviving the silent treatment. If you have some questions, I would like you to ask to do two things. Number one, maybe look at some of the earlier episodes where we talked about surviving the silent treatment or the dangers of disconnect. Listen to some of those episodes and see if they can be very helpful to you. Also, if you have questions or you'd just like to learn more about working with me, please go to my website at www.faithandfamilyempowerment.com. On the site, there will be some information on how you can contact me. Again, that's www.faithandfamilyempowerment.com. Thank you so much for joining us for the Faith and Family Matters podcast. Take care, and may you have a wonderful week.